Rationalization. The true difference between the object, concept, and science is the division between feelings, rather private ones, and rationalities, rather communal ones. Some seekers dare to expose their private participation by focusing on a more positive qualities of individuals, and one of these is, of course, Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Rousseau's work is still extremely popular. You probably would have expected that. His essay on the origin of language cannot be considered his most popular work, but I will nevertheless focus on it. I do not think that Rousseau was right. As I wrote before, I am not really looking for the true origin of language. Rousseau is important as he too, like Herder, developed a theory of the origin which starts from a clear and distinct characteristics concerning the individual body. His explanations concerning language fully develop from the point of the will to communicate, and they are, as a matter of fact, retrieved only fairly recent. It almost seems that Western views of language have developed in a complete circle, as the will to communicate, at least in postmodernism, has become the gateway towards restoring individual intentionalism. The will to communicate now symbolizes, metonymically speaking, the free choice of words by individual, in which the signifier and the signified are no longer divided. Roland Barthes has pointed out that this intentionality resembles the combinatory freedom of speech, and with it we have returned to the primary suppositions of the origin of language. Rousseau connects signs not with concepts but with sight, and sight not with objects but with movement. In his views about the origin of language, Rousseau primarily looks at human capacities in terms of possibilities for communication. The will to communicate is caused by recognition, not of objects or food, but as soon as one man recognized another as a sentient, thinking being similar to himself, the desire or the need to communicate to him his sentiments and his thoughts made him seek the means to do so. In describing these means to communicate, Rousseau immediately creates a notion which is very active today concerning all research that involve perceptions of the body in general. We have two general means of acting on other senses, namely movement and voice. Movement acts immediately through touch or immediately through gesture. Since the first does not reach further than an arm's length, it cannot communicate at a distance, but the other extends as far as does the field of vision. Hence, only sight and hearing are left as passive organs of language amongst man who lived dispersed. And there it is, the division of the five senses into two characteristics. The first are distinct senses, and the second are nearness senses. Contrary to Herder, Rousseau views the body not directly as a unity of the sensorium coming from inside. Hearing, and therefore the use of phonemes, for Rousseau too, is a mediator between the infinite number of impressions, but from a source outside the body. In Rousseau's words, "For more objects strike our sight than our hearing, and shapes exhibit greater variety than do sounds." Now, such a sentence seems superfluous on the surface, it does not tickle so much, but in the light of later scientific developments, an extremely curious phenomena occurred in Western science. There has developed an overbearing preference for sight as a means of representation. In fact, sight has become so dominating that those anthropologists these days have found an entire uncharted field of knowledge concerning the discriminated senses, like smell, touch, taste, etc. The biggest problem is not the lack of knowledge concerning these senses, for all we know, they are not discriminated, but plainly underrepresented in linguistics. In fact, the overwhelming success of perfume industry smells quite different. Rousseau, however, was still unaware of these later developments when he wrote, "An object presented before anything is set stimulates the imagination, arouses curiosity, and holds the mind in suspense and anticipation of what will be said. Hence, time enters the picture, but not in the way you constructed it in your theory. Rousseau creates a concept of time which is either anticipation or recollection in terms of arousal. It is also a concept which creates a rather overlooked, but maybe one of the most important features of language. This important feature entails that what is meant to overcome a distance in the will to communicate, at the same time remains at a distance by the means it applies, which is language. Not the object seems important, neither the arbitrary nature of the sign, nor the freedom to apply a combination of sounds, but the nude fact that language attracts attention through a particular absence of the object in question. Language equally has a penetrating aspect, but still without the presence of the object. According to Rousseau, it is the sight which is suited for mimicrying. Hence, not the individual as a mimicrying superior, as Gans makes us believe. And according to Rousseau, it is hearing that penetrates the senses in terms of arousal. Nevertheless, time still signifies the means of imagination. And ultimately, this imagination is aroused by what Rousseau views as accents caused through the human capacity for passionate gestures. The passion have their gestures, but they also have their accents. And these accents which makes us shudder, these accents to which one cannot close one's senses, penetrate to the ear, to the very depths of our heart, where they convey, quite in spite of ourselves, the very same emotions that wrung from us in the first place and make us feel that we hear. Let us conclude that visible makes for accurate imitation, but that interest is aroused more effectively by sounds." Rousseau concludes that languages primarily create the drama of recognition, which in itself might affect people, censorious and emotional. But it is not a matter of virtue, as Gans implies, rather the opposite, he explains in a footnote. "I have said elsewhere, for the vain miseries affect us more than the real ones. There are people who sob at tragedies, but never in their life took pity over a single unhappy person. The invention of the theater is marvelously suited to flatter our vanity with all kinds of virtues that we actually lack." Rousseau, too, reconstructs the originary event in language, but, contrary to Gans again, the traumatic beginning has a different way of avoiding violence, not by creating the object into a moral imperative, but by simply creating a distance. Language, as he explains, "The natural effect of the first needs was to separate men, not to unite them." And this reversal even becomes clearer when Rousseau states that the origin of languages is not due to men's first needs. It would be absurd if the cause of their separation gave rise to the means to unite them. And to conclude this more honest, less capitalist notion, in fact, Rousseau gives a rather less mechanistic, less built on mimesis, less built on survival of the fittest explanation, which is that the means to unite people is the result of passions. All the passions unite men, while the requirements of survival force them to flee one another. The difference between Rousseau's theory and that of theories which presuppose the violent nature of human beings seems rather slim, as Rousseau writes. "A man left alone on earth at the mercy of mankind had to be a wild animal. He was ready to inflict on others all the evil he feared from them. Fear and weakness are the origins of cruelty. But again, contrary to Gans, this violent aspect is the result of a fear for others, to be at the mercy of others, and those others do not disappear through a moral gnostic event in which the individuals are equalized by the distribution of linguistic signs or the capacity to mimicry. Rather, it originates from being transported outside ourselves by identifying with the suffering of being. And the only way to accomplish such transportation is not by fixating on the object of desire, but, according to Rousseau, he who imagines nothing feels only himself. In the midst of mankind he is alone. Reflection is born from the comparison between ideas, and it is their multiplicity that leads us to compare them. Anybody who sees but a single object has no occasion to make comparisons. Now, this I feel to be of crucial. In spite of the many attacks on Rousseau, as well on the critique on his ideas, in the midst of all this, his work remains centered around the notion that the origin of language is emotional, even if its rational development, called progress, has altered this origin, or as he writes, in proportion to the effort to perfect grammar and logic, this progress has accelerated language progress, and that all that is required to have a language grow rapidly cold and monotonous is to establish academies among the people who speak it. Signification of the sign is seen by Rousseau as a process of pluralization through change of meaning. It explains why the signifier and the signified have become so far removed and separated in modern linguistics. Their advanced rationalization has created a psychological concept designed to replace the individual body, the unity of the sensorium, as well as the plural nature of emotions. In terms of the exploitation of fantasy, poetry, theatrical display, and reality, no one signifier can signify the sign. In rationalizing this process, it is possible that the signs become much more realistic than the infinite range of phenomena to which they refer. This is not so much a matter of appropriation, as it is a matter of disappropriation of indefiniteness of emotions and passions, as emotions and passions are capable of continuous change. So should the signs attached to the object. The arbitrariness of signs, it follows, can never be an arbitrariness, as each communication between individuals could potentially embrace a passionate change of emotion. Such a passion cannot be expressed through the rationale. And in this sense, when Rousseau wrote that the barbarians floated Europe, his vision might not have been one on history, but, contrary, a view that concerned the future, juggling with the origin of language. In it, writing does not take secondary place, but primary place, beyond the scope of representation, as Rousseau believes that it is the merchant's way not to describe speech, but to analyze it. The overstatement of analyzing speech can all too easily lead to the destruction of the poetic sensitive and rudimentary quality of individual expression.